You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. This week's episode is split into two sides. This is Side A.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Clock Radio Speakers. I'm your co-host, Armand Wake Up. You can follow me on Twitter at Armand Wake Up, A-R-M-O-N-D, Wake Up, all one word. More important than that, please, please, please follow the official Clock Radio Speakers Twitter handle, which is at CRS Podcast. You can get all previous 200 and however many episodes. We've been in the 200s for a really long time.
But you we'll get there.
We'll hit 300. You can get all those at clockradiospeakers.com. You can also get those on Tumblr. You can also get those on iTunes. Clockradiospeakers.com is powered by Tumblr. And we're on Instagram at CRS Podcast. We are at Facebook / Clock Radio Speakers. I'm all over the place. I'm hungry. I should have ate. I didn't. So I'm just going to cut the intro here, and I'm just going to introduce Doc. What's up, man?
Oh, man. Doing all right. Everybody, you can follow me on Twitter if you want, at @Doc_Beats. That's not a Z. But like Armand said, just follow the show, because that's the best place to get all the, you know, the witty banter, the back and forth, all the good things. But how are you, man? Everything's good?
Everything's good, man. Real, real good.
You got any announcements you need to get out of the way?
I think I said it before a couple weeks ago, but the album is coming out before the end of the month.
Okay.
Spoke to the label today. Everything is submitted. Everything is good. So I'm super, super, super excited about that. Got the merch back. The mock-ups for the merch look amazing. I'm just excited, man. Like, even if I lose, it's going to be really, really dope. I'm excited for you guys to hear it. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. What's going on that side?
Let's see. I'm really excited about the UConn hockey team right now. That's like the most fun thing that's going on in my world.
Okay.
See, that's why I got to get you to come out here in the wintertime and take you to a hockey game.
I'm never coming to Connecticut in the wintertime.
Don't do this.
That's not happening. That's not happening. I love you, but that's not happening. No. Nick, clearly you don't care about my feelings or anything if you want me to come to Connecticut to the Northeast in the winter.
You need a reason to wear those Ronnie Fieg Timbos.
I've already worn them. I'm like, oh, it's under 30 degrees?
It's under 30. There's like a puff of snow. You're like, oh.
Yep, that's exactly what I did. I've already beat them up, and they are heavy as all get out. Good Lord.
Yeah, actually, you don't want to wear those in the plane, like, because you're going to be...
No. I mean, even just taking those off to go through TSA is going to be ridiculous. Like, yeah, that's... Yeah, no, don't want that smoke at all. What's going on in hip-hop? Do we have anything that we need to talk about?
Your man Kendrick Lamar and the good folks at TDE have put out the Black Panther soundtrack.
Ah, they've put out a soundtrack to the movie that's going to end racism.
What do you mean by end racism? Didn't Obama already end racism?
Obama definitely ended racism, and okay. Then it came back a little bit with Trump.
Okay.
And then we're going to put all of our hope in a Marvel movie. And yeah,
it's apparently the greatest movie that's ever been made.
Yep.
I'll drop the sarcasm for a second and say I'm actually really looking forward to see it. I enjoy most of the Marvel movies. I mean, I come in with like appropriate expectations, right? Like, it's a superhero movie, right? Like, I'm not expecting, oh my goodness, right? I mean, as like a straight up, like, not even a superhero type movie, like, I think it's possible for a movie to be really good, right? Like, I think, like,
sure.
I mean, The Dark Knight is an amazing movie.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it doesn't have to, it's not just, oh, it's a good superhero movie. So I have good, right, I have high right, hopes. Right. I'm going to try to catch it on Saturday.
Myself. Buy your tickets?
No, I think we'll be okay. I think we'll see. I mean, we'll see what availability is like on Saturday, but we have a lot of theaters around us, and we're headed out to, go out to Boston so we can, I realize this is extra, extra bougie. So we already have, Marissa and I, we already have TSA pre, right? Where you can sort of go to that special line when you fly, you don't have to take your shoes off and everything. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go get global entry.
That is basic.
It's like TSA pre, except it's like for when you like fly international, when you come back into the States, you can get through customs quicker.
Ah, international hold.
That's right. And since we're going to Japan this year, this is something that came as a free perk with some of our credit cards. So I was like, let's go get it.
Okay, let's get it. It's easy to snowman.
Yeah. So so Black Panther. So the soundtrack. We had the song with SZA, and then we had the song with Future, right? Those are the two like initial leaks / singles.
Yes.
And I don't know, I felt like those were fine. Is that accurate? I mean,
yeah, I like the Future record more than like the Kendrick and SZA record reeked of a soundtrack song.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I mean that in the best way possible, just because it felt like a big record for TDE. Even though it felt like a TDE record, it felt like a crossover TDE record. They're totally playing that at the end of the movie. I could totally see that.
Right.
And then the other record with Future, I think it was dope. I think it was cool.
It was
fine. I don't remember it, but I think it was cool.
It was fine. Like, I don't know. I would expect that. Like, I'm looking at the production lineup for that, and I'm like, oh. Like, I would sort of expect it to be, like, an amazing beat, but it was fine. I think that happens sometimes now. Like, you have all these producers who, like, have a hand in a beat, and sometimes all that really means is too many people tweaked it, right? Like, 100%. Didn't that happen on Kendrick's album with God, right? Like, you look at the production list for that, and you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
But then, actually, I'll pull that up right now. But then you actually listen to it, and you're like, it's fine. Yeah, like that record is produced by Soundwave, DJ Dahi, Cardo, like tons of people. There's like four other people I'm not even naming right now. And then you hear that beat, and you're like, sure, I guess. But yeah, just because there's a crazy production credits doesn't necessarily mean anything. But I don't know, like, I guess
that beat felt like a lot of people overthinking an idea.
Which one?
God.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, like, I don't know, like, I'm like looking at the production credits for this. It's like there's a bunch of Soundwave, there's some DJ Dahi, there's some Mike Will, Cardo, Frank Dukes.
Yep.
Like, there's, you know, all the people you normally, you know, it's like, okay. But listening to this, my thought was, this is okay.
But it's the soundtrack to a revolution, Doc. Maybe you don't understand because you're white, and white people are not allowed to understand Marvel superhero movies where the protagonist is a black guy.
Come on, you seem to have strong feelings about this movie. I'm picking up some sarcasm.
It's not even the movie. Because
it's the reaction.
Okay, so I'm a wrestling fan, so mm-hmm. I get it. We go to conferences, and we go to events, and people wear T-shirts, and people cosplay as their favorite wrestlers, and the wrestling community can be a little awkward and intense and very pessimistic too. So I get it. So the whole time as I saw this kind of revving up, I tried to let the kids have fun because I don't want to be over in the corner like, I just want to let people have things, right? But if we're getting to a place, like, just the way that people are treating this movie as if it's just this representation of black culture and we should be proud, and, you know, people are, what are we good? We're going to wear dashikis to the movie.
Just, it's all hashtag black excellence.
It's
and hashtag goals.
It's definitely hashtag goals. We are 100% seeing people. We're 100% getting photo shoots at the movie theater. That's 100% happening. And there's going to be a bunch of discussions. I even saw an article yesterday where somebody was disappointed that there was no LGBT representation in the movie. Like, do we have to be, does everything have to be in everything? Like, there's too much emphasis, too much pressure on a movie. Now, I understand throughout history, the arts have always reflected the culture, like the times. I totally get that. But it's just a movie, y'all.
It is. I mean, I don't know. It's just a movie. But I mean, it's, you know, it is a movie with a, you know, largely minority cast that is set in an African country that, you know, was never colonized. Like, that's the story of Wakanda, right? Like, that's the idea. So, like, it is this. I get it. Like, I understand, like, the hype. I mean, also, it helps that, you know, it's starring people who are known as good actors and actresses, directed by a guy who has a great track record. Like, sure. So, you know, hopes are really high.
Sure.
And it appears to have, you know, mostly or entirely, I mean, we'll find out when everybody sees it, but it appears to have delivered, right? Which is hard. Like, in this era of, I mean, at least on that initial hype. But now the hype is getting so much that, I don't know, I mean, maybe it can live up to it. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
I mean, it's going to make a ton of money.
100%.
Now, what'll be interesting is, like, so here's why I think this is a case where, like, representation, like, really matters, right? Like, where Hollywood is dumb, but that's because most industries are dumb and they just follow and want to copy the trends of whatever has worked before, right? Like, I don't think it's an accident that, like, after Wonder Woman, I think this is right, comic book nerds who listen, please keep me honest, after Wonder Woman did so well, Captain Marvel, which is an upcoming Marvel movie that has a female protagonist, a female superhero in it, you know, like the director and the main actress in that, like all of a sudden, like and like the feel and like you, I believe the budget as well got like pushed up a notch, not because, you know, Marvel was like, oh, this is the right thing to do, but because they're like, oh, we can make money.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
But like the problem is like without that initial, it's like a chicken and egg problem. Like without that initial representation and without that initial, like someone's got to be the first. And it's not, listen, Black Panther's not the first black superhero movie ever, right? That's not what I'm saying. But it is the first largely African-American, like, movie in this Marvel run. In this more important, I guess you could even say in this, like, superhero run that we're now on. Right? Because, sure. Like, when we grew up, like, unless it was, like, a Batman movie, like, superhero movies were kind of jokey, comic-y, like they weren't taken that seriously. Like that's actually why, like when you and I were really young, like those two Michael Keaton Batman movies, those were like revolutionary because Superman had happened for like a previous generation, and then there was such a, and then those fizzled out, and then there was such a long period of time, like it wasn't a given that, oh, there's going to be a big budget superhero movie with actors and actresses I've heard of directed by somebody who's good at what they do. Like that was not assumed.
Sure.
Right. But now we're in this era where it's like, you know, I don't know. I mean, people always, I don't know, I'm ranting and raving right now, right? But like, I don't know. I always feel like people forget sometimes that, like, you know, whether we like it or not, we are a purely capitalistic society. And like, so that means that, you know, companies are going to do whatever they think can make money. And where they're wrong, like, where people are right is like, actually, companies can make a lot of money by having movies or whatever that star women, people of color, LGBTQ, like who, like you can make tons of money with that, but you have to have a first one, right? And then you get a lot of hype. Like you have to, it's, you know, but it's hard because like you got to get over that hump.
I just wish that specifically for black people, that the first time, like it's really easy to either get support from black people or to like outrage us. So if you say one thing, if there's one thing that's negative or even could be negative or even could possibly be taken as negative, the pitchforks come out. I know that's indicative of just our culture in general nowadays, but like, and then I remember we talked about that. Like, are we too sensitive or not? That was a good discussion. But on the same token, it's like the minute you mention African-American, it's immediately like, yes, throw it all on the wall. Bet on black, like we're in. And that's great. I understand that. I totally do. I think for me, and I think a theme of Clock Radio Speakers is quality. So I'm not saying that this movie is going to be bad. But what I am saying is let's be proud of it because it's also good, not just because it represents black people. It's often my critique of Christian hip hop too, or just all things that come from Christian culture. We immediately get behind the first person to say Jesus versus like, okay, but where's the standard? Like, is this good? Is this sound? Is this like, is this reflective of the culture? Is this good?
Right.
So I just want those things to be parallel. Yes, it's important for representation. I have a son and a daughter. So yes, I understand that it's important for them to see people who look like them doing amazing things. I understand that. But I want to see them doing amazing things. I don't just want my son to look at another man and just say, oh, there's an adult black male. Well, what is he doing? And is he doing it well? I don't want my daughter to look at a black woman and say, oh, there's a black woman. I can aspire to be that. Well, why is she aspiring to be that black woman? Is it because she's doing something in excellence? I would hope so. So that's my That's my rant. And then also, I'm not going to put all of my stock into representation either. Like, it's good. It's a piece of the pie, but it's not the whole pie. And maybe that comes from, again, me growing up a military brat, where I was exposed to other cultures all the time, where I didn't really go. Like, my experiences in Columbus, Ohio was the most consistently Black experience that I've had in my life, except for my summers when I would go to St. Louis for this. I go to St. Louis, but even that was short. I'm in a predominantly or a city and in environments that are predominantly Black, like, for the first time in my whole life. So maybe it's something that I'm missing. I could be ignorant in that too, but, you know.
How excited would you be if, when the credits roll for Black Panther, all of a sudden all you hear is Logic singing "Black People"? Like, would that be the greatest moment in movie history?
Amazing, spectacular, stupendous. I was not expecting Logic. Oh, I would be so mad. I would be so mad. I really want to sign with a major deal just so I can run into Logic.
Wow.
He's 100% on my Koofy list. No disrespect to our Muslim listeners. Absolutely not. Yo, if I don't know how the Black Panther story goes, but if Wakanda is saved from the evil forces or however the movie ends, and Logic pops,
Black people.
Oh my God, Black people! White people, everybody, and I gotta get it, and I gotta go to everybody, wonderful and beautiful. Oh my God! Oh, all right. What else are we talking about? Yo, can we talk about these new look Cavs real quick? Can we switch to sports for a second?
Oh, sure. We could do that real quick.
Yo, so the entire city of Cleveland, the entire state of Ohio, has went from burn everything to we're going to win the championship.
Well, those
72 hours.
That's how fandom goes, right? Where it's like you have one of two options. You're the greatest ever, or meh.
Yeah. I will say this though. I really enjoy, like, I have this theory that LeBron does not like playing with younger players. And I feel like that was based off of him getting destroyed by the Spurs the first time. And he was like, not doing this again. But seeing him with some younger guys who are hungry, like, these last two games have been real. I mean, the you know, you could say the Boston game was a fluke. You could also say that Boston isn't as good as people think that they are.
Yeah, their offense is not right now.
It's Kyrie ISO. Mm. That's their offense. But watching them play against OKC, who has gotten better throughout the season, that was the telltale where I was like super impressed with their performance yesterday. Super impressed. So I hate Golden State, except Klay Thompson. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm looking forward to a final. I'm also looking forward to seeing what your man Joe Jellybean Johnson does in Houston. Because, I mean, is there a chance that Golden State doesn't make it to the finals this year? Is there a chance?
Can you imagine if the person who gets Chris Paul to the promised land is Joe Johnson? The NBA is weird, man.
NBA is super weird.
So absolutely weird. But no, I mean, it was one of those things where, like, I thought the Cavs did really good. I mean, you know, I think when LeBron is your GM, it's kind of the same problem as, like, Doc Rivers is your GM, right? Where, like, first of all, doing two jobs at the same time, never a good idea. Secondly, they both sort of wanted to bring in players who they had seen proven do well against them in the past. But, like, a GM also needs to, like, look to the future a little bit. So, like, you know, I think they did it. I think they sort of did the right thing. So far it's all looking good. I mean, there will be some ups and downs, obviously. I don't know if they're necessarily any better. I mean, not any better. I know that they're better. It's not that they're all of a sudden, I don't think they're a real threat to Golden State right at this point, but I will say that, like, you know, if this is good enough to get them there, you know, you'd still favor Golden State, but, like, you always got to give LeBron a chance. Always.
Yeah. Always.
Always.
Always. Except for 2 years ago when everybody, well, not 2 years ago, 3 years ago when everybody was hurt.
Even then, that was heroic.
It was.
They went to all the way slow down, right? Like, they were like, okay, here's what's going to happen. LeBron's going to, we're going to clear out and LeBron's going to dribble for 22 seconds. and they almost pulled off, but like they did way better. Yeah.
Yeah. Step. Oh my God. If I could just like turn into a monster, I would take away LeBron's mentality of a step back three. Like, that is the most irritating thing that he does. He'll dribble for 15 seconds only to take a step back three 5 feet away from the 3-point line.
Listen,
sometimes he hits it, but listen, still.
Can I explain to you the most irritating thing in basketball? And I know what it is because my UConn Huskies men's basketball team does this.
Okay.
First of all, their offense isn't much. It's like, I don't know. It doesn't even look like an offense. There's a whole lot of, I don't know, not much motion, but there's passing. So it's just a lot of like hot potato. And then it almost inevitably ends up with a shot just inside the 3-point line.
Oh my God.
Which we aren't good at making. It's just, it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's the worst to watch. It's like, it's just like, you do realize that like we now like kind of, I don't want to say we have basketball offense figured out, but like, here's what you should be doing. Is it a three? Is the floor spaced? You should probably take it. Is it down low? You should probably take it. Is it in between? Well, unless you're really good at mid-range or if the shot clock's running down, maybe you should try to find a better shot.
You have 35 seconds to find a better shot.
Man. All that really does... Right. 35 seconds.
All that really does is what?
I was going to say, all that really does is just encourage some coaches to overthink.
Sure.
Right? That's just an extra 11 seconds where they can, like, you know... Because in college, it's all about the coach, right?
Yeah.
Anyway. Don't even get me started on college sports rant.
I know. I felt like that comment was about to set you up for a rant.
No.
So
Let's move on. So
what else is going on?
We recently had the 15th anniversary of an album that is was a huge deal, and I feel like has been kind of forgotten. Is that fair to say?
It's weird. It's a classic. It is an album that changed the course of music in many ways. But yeah, it's not mentioned with the other. Okay, so let's talk about classics of this era. First of all, we're talking about 50 Cent, Get Rich or Die Trying.
Yeah.
But to make your point, let's discuss what are the other classic projects, because I think we kind of have to include at least a few mixtapes post 2000.
Early 2000s are kind of a rough time.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. But you've got just, and I'm sure we're not going to get everything, but let's just say Trap or Die, College Dropout.
Yep.
So Far Gone.
Blueprint.
Blueprint.
Supreme Clientele, if you want to get like that's.
Yeah, but I think that's more of a hip hop classic. I want to talk about albums that sort of changed the course of music.
Oh,
period.
I see. Okay, you're going like that.
Because I think Get Rich or Die Trying had a huge impact. I'm sorry, Good Kid, Mad City is the other one I was thinking of.
Yeah. I feel like there's a Dipset record in there, but I can't quite place it on one.
You probably would just have to do Dipset 1 through 5.
I would almost say maybe volume 3.
Is that one had a collection of everything,
yeah,
like the records that got going. 2 was classic for the Nas diss records.
Yeah.
I think 3 is a classic. 3's probably the best.
It's the peak.
Yeah, because that's Bigger Picture.
Right.
That's oh my God.
I mean, basically, like, I could tell you as somebody who in the aftermath of both like the G-Unit sound and the Dipset sound, I can tell you that like New York City was chasing that for a really long time.
Was?
I'm being kind.
Okay. And that's why it's good that we're talking about this album now, because listening to this album, it made me realize a lot about not only just New York hip hop, but I think 50 changed hip hop as a whole. And I think the remnants of the impact of this album and what he did, I think I can still hear it in music today.
Mm. Mm.
100%.
Interesting.
So, but I think in the course of it being forgotten, when you start thinking of recent classics, I think because College Dropout just celebrated an anniversary this week, I believe. And people were really quick to give that album praise. mostly because of, I think, who Kanye is and who Kanye still is. But 50 in the same vein, post Curtis, has not had the same fanfare that Kanye has had. So I think people are slower to recognize, because I think the Get Rich or Die Trying thing was like, yeah, it's definitely a classic, but it wasn't like, yo, it was for us. Like, I remember when those four records leaked, when they leaked the four records for the Super Bowl, but then like the album leaked like right after that. So like, I remember the yo, but it was, it's not that same thing universal. That's not the same sentiment universally for this album. So I is that what you were talking about, is why this album is forgotten?
I think this album is forgotten because I think hip hop is okay when thinking about, like, cause you know, we're all, it's all about this. Like we're all like sort of very nostalgic, right? So hip hop is okay with type with like recognizing like milestone records or looking back when the artist is either still like noteworthy, mm-hmm. or if the artist is very clearly retired, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm.
But 50, I don't think people know what to do with 50 Cent, right?
Because okay.
like he's still kind of like, I feel like if Busta Rhymes had an undisputed classic, I feel like we would have the same problem with Busta Rhymes. But maybe I'm wrong. Like, where it's sort of like, I don't know. I mean, like, 50 isn't exactly like an elder statesman.
Yes, he's a new artist.
He's a what?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. You're saying like who 50 is now.
Yeah, he's not seen as like an elder statesman.
Oh, 100%. Not at all.
So like, we don't know.
He's a social media troll at this point.
It's like, we also don't know what to do with DMX.
Yeah.
That's for a different reason. But like, hip hop is okay with like, okay, like you're still big and this was your first big album. We can go look back at that. Or you're clearly an elder statesman. But any other sort of thing, we kind of don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that's me. But yeah, anyway. So
yeah.
Where are we? I'm lost.
No, I think because of what he did post, just post in his career, like 50's known for a lot of theatrics.
Yeah.
And the theatrics ended up overshadowing the music at large. I think there's still songs in the club, Many Men, but listening back to this album was everywhere.
Everywhere.
And it was written like it was intended to be everywhere.
Mm.
That was the first takeaway that I had. This album was very much an album that was easily digestible, easily accessible from the youngest of children to the oldest of grandparents. And I think that benefited him. And that's what I'm saying that I hear in music today, because prior to this, you know, there wasn't an artist who did that and got embraced for it.
I was going to say Ja Rule.
And I mean, even Nelly.
Nelly also comes to mind. I mean, when I was listening to Get Rich or Die Trying, like what really stuck me is you forget the melodies on the hooks. Right. And like,
yeah.
It made me like sort of think back to, I remember seeing this on MTV once. It must have been something about the making of The Chronic, but it was a really young Snoop explaining how Dre got Snoop to sort of rap sing with a melody for mm-hmm. the first time and had to like mm-hmm. plan it out. And like, you sort of think and you go, you know, not to say that Snoop was the first rapper to ever really do that, but like, you could imagine like if Snoop were a new artist in 2003 and we sort of had the hindsight of people like Nelly, Ja Rule, etc., doing that sort of thing, he might have almost had like a 50 Cent style sound just on the West Coast, if that kind of makes sense. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like,
yep.
but 50 was able to 50 was able to both be melodic and hard at the same time, right? Because he was pitched as like this like hip hop superhero, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's one of the definitive examples of sort of the thing that our generation of hip hop fans used to like think was the norm, or at least used to like look out for, which is that every couple of years, there's going to be a combination of the big machine plus an artist who is just, it is their time. They've got the people around them, all this stuff. And then it all gets pushed, the big button gets pushed in the office, and it all happens at once. And it doesn't happen
all that often, but the people for whom that has been possible to make happen, they are renowned as legends.
Yes.
Right? It's Def Jam, Rough Riders, and DMX in early 98, right? It's Puffy and Big and Bad Boy in 94, right? It, I mean, there's not a ton of examples like this, you know, where it's like, absolutely, we've got this, it, you know, and 50, I mean, this album is really interesting because, like, I was listening to it and I was trying to figure out, like, you know, because I had the timeline off in my head. I forgot how early he signed to Aftermath. He signed to Aftermath in, I think it's June of 2002.
Yeah.
And I thought it was later. And so when I was first, before I realized it was June 2002, I was sitting there going, okay, I wonder how much of this was like, here's what we had and we were shopping versus here's the stuff we did after we signed up with Aftermath. But no, I mean, this was really a case of like, they did Guess Who's Back.
Yep.
And then, you know, it was basically right at the, like, they, you know, he signs with Dre and M right at the same time that they start putting all the mixtapes out,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's all one big, you know, push leading towards, you know, February 2003.
Yep.
And the Double XL cover and all
yep.
that.
Yep.
But oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, sonically, like, going back and listening to this, what was really interesting is, like, you know, the sort of, first of all the Dre records that are on here. Because it wasn't a given that you'd have, like, you know, he's got, what, 1, 2, 3, 4. I guess he's only got 4 Dre records. I thought there were more.
Which records are the Dre records for our audience?
Oh, sure, sure. I'm talking like everybody knows this by their hand. So, In the Club, obviously. Heat, If I Can't, and Back Down.
So Dre did Back Down?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. To go back to your original point about what they took to, or what they already had, and what they already had and what they created. It's clear that whatever they already had is at the end of the album.
Oh, the bonus tracks, you mean?
Yeah. To me, the bonus tracks are what they had, and I feel like they locked in and said, we're going to start from scratch.
Well, Life's on the Line is old, right? I mean, that's like Power
Life's
of the Dollar.
That's 99.
Yeah.
I think everything else was. I think the good thing about it was that they... Whoa, easy there, buddy. I think the good thing... Well, let me see if I can... I think the good thing about this album is that they still allowed G-Unit producers, which at this time was what, Sha Money XL?
Yeah, Sha Money, who's got a bunch of like co-production credits, and then he does Poor Little Rich.
Oh, co-production, which means he did the beat and had to split?
No. I mean, Sha was, I mean, it's funny, right? Because, like, I don't know Sha, but, like, I know, like, people who know. Because, like, he, I mean, he's from...
That's right, you have worked with G-Unit.
Sha is, like, that's, like, the same neighborhood and the same guys as, like, yeah, like, Superstar J and all them. So, like, that's the same part mm-hmm. of Queens. Sha Money was, like, the engineer slash, like, produce, like, because the story, I mean, the story of, like, you know, after, basically after 50 got shot, he didn't really trust a lot of people anymore. And then, like, Sha Money bought, like, one of the first, like, Pro Tools rigs that you didn't need, like, a big studio for, and basically set up, like, a basement studio. And then they made Guess Who's Back, and then they made all those mixtapes. And so, like, Sha Money is, like, his, like, that's his, you know, that's, you know, that's the doc to his Armand, if you will.
Got
right
it.
But it's like a little production here, a little recording here, a little editing here, like everything.
Got it.
But no, I mean, I don't know, like, Eminem's all over this actually in a way that I totally like forgot. Right, like Patiently Waiting obviously and Don't Push Me, but you know, he has co-production credits on Many Men, co-production credits on Poor Little Rich, co-production on High All the Time.
I'm just laughing at Eminem beats. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And I'm almost wondering, I don't know. I'm looking at this. I'm like, really? Like co-production? Eminem? Wasn't he just like, turn this knob, twist this? Anyway.
I almost feel like, no, because I almost feel like it was the reverse. I feel like Eminem submitted beats like, yo, I got something for you. And then, because that's what he would sound like. And then like the other producers in the studio were like, yeah, this is great. And then Eminem is like, yeah, I'm going to go get some food. I'll be right back. And then he left and they were like, yeah, let's tweak this.
And yet Patiently Waiting is a classic. So I think the way this album opens up is the first opening shot of this album is the album to me, right?
No, like, I agree. The first, what, 8, 9
well,
songs?
Well, for
hold
me...
Hold on, let's go.
Okay. I mean, first of all, the intro is like 7 seconds long, but it's perfect.
I love the intro.
Right. And then What Up Gangsta is a perfect first track.
Yep. And it's a classic.
Right. Patiently Waiting is dope. It's of its era, but it's dope.
Yeah. I think that's what I meant when I was kind of hesitant of you saying it's a classic. Like, it's perfect for this album. It's perfect for this era. But am I like, yo, if we're doing a definitive 15 on 50, am I doing Patiently Waiting? I don't know.
No, I don't think so. And Many Men is amazing.
100% classic record.
And yet I listened to it now and I was really like, man, 50 really only raps about like 3 things.
Still to this day. No content.
But we didn't know that then. And because it's funny, we were talking about Black Panther earlier, like the 50 Cent, like, backstory, right, fit in perfectly with like the 3 or 4 things that he raps about. It's just that when he's still rapping about that 14 years or whatever, 15 years later, it's like, all right. And then In the Club, which, you know, 100% of its time.
Yep.
I don't know how well it's aged, but it's a classic.
Yeah. One of the greatest hip hop crossover records ever.
Mm.
One of the greatest, like, you know, if we're talking about club songs, like, if we're talking like club records and hip hop, like In the Club is 100% up there on the list.
It's definitely a certain era of like a Dre beat, right? Where you've got the guitar that like the guitar underneath that sort of sounds like from, I don't know. It's the same style of production that shows up on The Watcher Part 2, which was released like probably 4 months before this. Where Mike Elizondo, who is Drake's guitar and bass player, comes in with what I can only describe as like a James Bondish like guitar riff, right? And he's the same guy playing guitar in the back, like on In the Club. And once you hear it, you're like, oh right, it's that era of Dre beat.
I was gonna say, has Dre surpassed that era?
I mean, the G-Unit era was the last, like, that was the last big Dre time, right? Mm-hmm. But I guess the question is, does that era really start with 2001 and go through?
I almost think that era, wait, the G-Unit era or the
no,
Dre era?
That Dre sound.
That starts with 2001.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big run.
It's a long run, and it probably ends with the first leaks from Detox.
Maybe documentary?
No, I'm going to go with the first leaks from Detox.
When is that?
Like, remember, what are the name of those records? There was a...
Oh,
there
like
was
Top
a,
Down?
Yeah.
No, and I like, think I think, Dre... I think his era was done way before then. I don't think
no,
he...
No. If, I'm not talking about peak. I'm talking about when he, like, switched.
Oh, switched it up. I don't know if he ever... I don't know. There's records off Compton that still... I mean, they sound... They have modern, like, drums on them, but they still sound like Dre.
Yeah, they still sound like Dre, but I don't think it's that Scott Storch sort of sound. I think he has evolved.
I don't know, not a single Storch. Anyway, he didn't work. I don't know. His work with Storch kind of ended, but yeah, I hear what you mean. I get what you
mean.
But
yeah, but there's a like Storch has a specific sound that I feel like Dre really whored out. Like even if their relationship was quick, like Dre took that and was like, yeah, we're going to use this for a while.
Yeah. I mean, so after In the Club, like I'm not big on High All the Time.
Nope.
Because
I think that's the, yeah.
Because I, but in general, I don't ever really care about people making songs about why they're high. And then I think Heat's overrated.
He didn't age well, but I loved Heat when it first came out.
I know a lot of people did. And then If I Can't, like for most people, those first 8, you're just like, yep. And then you get to Bloodhound and you're like, no.
Bloodhound is trash. So there may or may not be a diss record by me on the Heat floating around there somewhere.
Yeah. Back down is, you know, it's like it's so stereotypical Dre and 50, but it works.
Yeah, I went and listened. Remember, it was a big deal about the skit at the end where he was supposed to expose Ja Rule to Ja Rule. Like, this would never happen in hip hop. Never. Like, oh, Ja Rule's gay. We're going to get Ja Rule's gay lover to talk about their relationship on my album. That was a part of the rollout. So when the record leaked, people went straight to Back Down to hear the exposal that Ja Rule was getting. That would never happen.
Well, it's terrible. That would never happen again. It's terrible.
It's terrible. It's corny. It's goofy. It's unnecessary. But it reeks of 2003. So does P.I.M.P. That's a terrible song.
Mr. Porter. Yeah. I don't know. I think like after this, like some of these records, I mean, we loved them at the time, right? We love 21 Questions. We love Like My Style. We love Don't Push Me. I don't know how well they've aged. I mean, Banks is still great on Banks. I forgot, man. Banks sounds energetic on Don't Push Me.
I miss 2002, 2003 Lloyd Banks. I miss Money in the Bank Lloyd Banks.
When I got to see Banks do Banks Workout. That's what it's called, right? It was Banks Workout, right?
Yep.
I got to see him. So, you know, what was it? April 2003 and 50 comes to play at UConn. So, and he's got, and Banks does Banks Workout. I was like, man,
that's crazy.
Too bad we didn't have podcasts back then. We would have had to do a whole live show.
I just would have you bootleg it.
Bootleg it? Yeah.
Yeah, I need to see.
And you know, who opened for, you know who was also on the bill with 50?
Oh my God, who? Ryan Leslie?
No, Busta Rhymes. In 2003.
What is that? Is that
That's right Busta? After Genesis.
Is it? Yeah, Genesis.
So like As I Come Back.
It's Break Your Neck too, right?
Yeah, Pastor Kvasie. That's such a 2003 record.
Jesus. Is Kvasie still liquor? Is that still around?
Yeah, it's still around.
Okay.
So anyway, so like, all right. So when you went back and listened to this, it's still a classic, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But to me, it's a classic. Like, it's not I go back and listen to this and I'm like, oh, wow. Like, this really holds up. This is particular. Like, it was of a time, but it was a moment. And like, to separate 50, the moment, along with like the fact that like really the success of this album, like just launches like G-Unit and this whole other thing that happens, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's not a perfect album, right? It's too long, but most debut albums are.
I mean, and that's indicative of 2003.
Yeah, absolutely.
2003, you're going to get 19 tracks. Do you think the end was necessary? Should the album have ended with Gotta Make It to Heaven instead of adding Wangsta, You're Not Like Me, and Life's on Hard?
I think you could have ended with Wangsta as the one one bonus track and called it a day.
I agree with that.
Wangsta sounds terrible now.
Oof.
Awful. I mean, it was kind of a novelty back. I mean, I don't know. In my head, for whatever reason, like every time I hear Wangsta, I just imagine like I'm all of a sudden in like season 3 of The Wire.
Oh, wow.
Right, that's the visual in my head.
I 100% found that book at my library.
Oh man,
and it's 100% on reserve. I'm waiting on one person.
Shout out to public libraries,
man, for the win. So I'm excited. I'm excited to read that. But anyway, yeah.
Anything else you want to say about this album? I mean, anything surprise you like re-listening to this?
No, it felt like it was one of those albums that like I was so familiar with, like I didn't really have to like listen to it for it to jog my memory.
The one thing I appreciated is like how tidy some of these tracks are.
Yeah.
Like In the Club is 3 minutes and 13 seconds.
But that's what I'm talking about. The things they're still lingering. Like this is 2003. So this is like the height of the mixtape era.
Yeah.
Jesus. It's the height of the mixtape era, which means there are Cassidy and Lloyd Banks are putting out freestyles every other week and they're 90 bars. You know, it was all about the bars. People don't realize this. I know he's a hot podcaster now, but like Joe Budden and 50 Cent were the two quintessential mixtape artists in 2002, 2003. Mm. If your mixtape had either one of those guys on your project, either or actually, like you were going to sell units. Or people were going to download your mixtape online. And so those are two artists who are polar opposites. Joe Budden is the rappity rapper. 50 Cent is the song maker. And to see things like, I mean, even things like on You're Not Like Me starts off with NYPD, LAPD. What does that have to do with the song? Absolutely nothing, but it gives people something to engage soon as the beat comes in.
Yeah.
Instead of like yo's and yeah's and one twos, that's songwriting. So I commend 50 because what he aspired to do from a technical aspect with making these songs. Like, he realized that it's not really about lyrics, and that's kind of where we are now, at least to a certain degree, because I feel like Hippity Hop and lyricism will be back in style by the end of the year. But a lot of these artists who are just focused on making songs, making money, putting themselves out there, that's all 50.
Yeah.
Like, 50 took that, and he was one of the first quote unquote internet artists who kind of merged and was embraced by everybody. Like, I mean, I don't know if people, there's a whole generation now that just does not understand the fever pitch that Get Rich had, or just 50 had, period. Like, remember he signed to Shady and then put out the freestyle over Till I Collapse? Like, that was a thing.
Till I Collapse. I mean, so much so that, like, actually, didn't they, like, end up putting that on...
It's like on a video game or something.
No, they put that on, like, the bonus disc for 8 Mile or something.
Oh, yeah, it could be. Could be. Oh, man, that 8 Mile soundtrack. I got to get my mic fixed because I really want to play some songs off the 8 Mile soundtrack. I'll pass. Oof. Jesus. But yeah, absolutely. Like, freestyle, he was the first person to, like, turn freestyles into, no, we have to put this out on retail projects. Like, 50 did a lot, and I think that it kind of gets overlooked because it's 50, and he kind of did it to himself to a degree.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
All right, man. Anything else you want to say about 50?
Nah, I think I'm good.
Okay. Anything else we need to talk about on this side A this week?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Well, side B, we're going to have a special guest on, and you definitely need to go to clackerspeakers.com and get that if you don't subscribe. Yeah. And we'll see you on side B.
We hope you enjoyed side A of this week's episode. Please check out side B at clackradiospeakers.com.
All right. Let me text Marissa.
That is scary.
What's that?
I normally don't look at this stuff, but I'm looking at kids ducking down, Snapchatting the school get shot up.
Oh, man.
It's crazy. Ugh. Yeah, you didn't even get your bars off on that. You're like, I don't even want, like, today's just not the day.
I mean, what do you want me to say, right? I mean, yeah. America, man.
Yeah?
Like, in a weird way, like, we're sitting here talking about 50 Cent, like, only, like, we are a culture that idolizes, glorifies, mythologizes violence, right?
Mm-hmm.
In every way mm-hmm. possible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of money that you can make in America by playing up to that in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
50 Cent did that.
Yep.
Lots of people in hip-hop have done it, right?
That would be a really... You should probably leave this in. I mean,
you know, the NFL does it, and then they walk away from it because they got players whose brains are getting bashed in, right? Like, we are a violent culture who loves violent things. And, yep. Like, you know, we're also a cult. I mean, I talked about 50 as, like, a hip-hop, like, superhero. That's the way it was pitched, right? America is the story of you being your own superhero, right? Right, like the American dream, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, right? All that stuff. It's all in this, like, self-reliance, right? And that is so deeply embedded in our cultural DNA. And so, yeah, like we are a violent country who watches violent sports, a lot of violent media. Oh, and by the way, we have a ridiculous amount of guns floating around, legal, illegal, whatever. We just have a lot of them. And so we all know why. I shouldn't say we all know why, right? Because there's a bunch of people who tell me I'm wrong. But to me, it's pretty obvious. Like, look, we all know why we have these mass shootings, at least at large. Like, each individual one is different. I get that. But, like, generally speaking, we know why, right? Because we have a lot of guns and, you know, not everybody is, whether it's mental stability or they had a bad day or they're a bad person or whatever. And, like, the more guns you have, the more people who will die. That's the way it works, right? It's not like, oh, well, if only good guys with guns had... No. More people are just going to get killed, right?
Yeah.
So the more guns you have, the more people who are going to die. And, you know, for whatever reason, there's a lot of them, but we've decided that it's not worth giving up our national myth to stop people from dying. And here we are. That's it.
Yeah. Well, that's a depressing way to end the show.